Exodus chapter 4. Early on in Exodus, we found out that there were a lot of people in Israel under hopeless conditions. One family defied the circumstances, acted in faith in God's promise, looked at that helpless baby in their arms and says, "Why not him?" And Moses was saved. The very instrument of death, the Nile River, that Pharaoh intended to slay the deliverer, God used it to float him right into Pharaoh's house so Pharaoh could give him room and board and educate him. I like God's sense of humor. 40 years went by and Moses was trained in all the wisdom of Egypt, mighty in both word and deed. I want you to remember that too. I get so sick of Christians and their spiritual pride and their humility. When I was a kid, I could figure out that woman who used to advertise, "Come and see me preach in my sackcloth dress," wasn't worth going to see. Dr. Tozer said, "A truly humble man doesn't look back to see if he was." God's word says Moses was mighty in word and deed before he ever left Egypt. You may wonder why God was so hard on him, got mad at him in last night's lesson, and gave him Aaron, who would be a thorn in his flesh ever after. Because he just flat out lied. And then when you run out of real excuses to act in faith, once you start that negative route, you'll end up lying. You'll cross the line somewhere if you keep practicing doubt. Well, you make God real mad. Moses just flat lied. He said, "I can't speak." Just two chapters earlier, God said he was mighty in word. Lying. If you analyze a lot of your excuses for not following God, you're lying too. God hates excuses of any kind. But he really hates the ones that are not honest. I mean, Moses didn't talk back to him. Last night we said when God finally called him out of that bush that was burning, yet wasn't being consumed, Moses said, "Behold, they'll not believe me nor hearken to my voice, for they'll say, 'The Lord hath not appeared unto thee.'" The Lord was pretty nice to him. Gave him three miracles. A demonstration of his authority and his miracle healing power and his ability to stifle the very life of Egypt itself and turn water to blood. But when he got around to saying, "Oh, my Lord, I'm not eloquent. I'm slow of speech and of a slow tongue." That's a freaking lie. I can't make a pledge like that. "I'll go where you want me to go, dear Lord." You know how many thousands of Christians sing that on Sunday morning? They're lying in their teeth, just like Moses. They wouldn't go around a block. And he volunteered to deliver God's people in his own strength, made a mess of it, fled in fear, had 40 years of spiritual preparation. But that didn't deliver him from everything. Now, I want you to notice something about God. I said this last night, that after all this investment of miracle preservation, God was pretty patient with Moses until he got down the line there. And it should comfort you, the ends to which God will go to continue to develop and educate and train and bring forth those that He's chosen. It's a wonderful thing to be called of God. I had a series of messages here. You can't be a Christian without being called of God. That's the doctrine of prevenient grace. No man cometh to the Father save the Spirit draw him. The Corinthians were called to be saints. Saints from the word hagios. It has nothing to do with behavioral perfection. That has to do with righteousness. Saints comes from the word hagios, that is a liturgical word that has to do with committing something to the use of the deity. It means giving it over completely, like laying an offering on an altar, exclusively for the use of the deity. You are called to give yourself over completely to God's use. You are called to become His habitation. You are called that in you might reside the mind of Christ. All Christianity makes God some bellhop, some waiter, something for you. You put God on a smorgasbord of life's choices, making compete with all other options of that which will do the most for you. It's the other way around. You're not your own. You're bought with a price. You're called to be a saint. You're called to offer yourself up. Well, I just don't think that what I do amounts to very much or means anything. You insult God. He gave His Son for you. There's your worth. The anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. The Lord said unto him, "Who hath made man's mouth?" And I ended last night by saying, you know, you get real stupid when you start resisting God. Telling God who made man's mouth, "I can't speak, I'm slow of tongue," when God's talking to him out of a bush that doesn't have a mouth. Figure that one out. But he got through to Moses, and Moses went and returned to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said unto him, "Let me go, I pray thee, and return unto my brethren which are in Egypt, and see whether they be yet alive." And Jethro said to Moses, "Go in peace." And the Lord said unto Moses in Midian, "Go, return unto Egypt, for all the men are dead which sought thy life." And Moses took his wife. Now, there's a new ingredient. We've got to deal with that right after. Somebody called and said, "How did Pharaoh's daughter get away with coming up with a baby out of the clear blue sky?" She didn't get it out of the clear blue sky. She got it out of the Nile. That's for openers. She named him Moses, which means drawn up or drawn out. And God was pretty clever. They worshiped the Nile. Baby come floating down the Nile. She could convince the old man it was sent by God. Plus the fact she was his daughter. Now, all of those reasons are interesting. The real reason is God planned it that way. Tampa, Florida. I'm a truck driver visiting Florida. I want to send $50. Hang in there. From Oakland. "Will you please go out in your truck right now? Just get up from whatever you're doing. It'll wait. And go out to your truck and see if you can get 1610 on your AM dial. I'm going to reactivate the King's truckers that listen to me all across country on 1610 AM. So I'm... Not going to find out if you can pick it up. You don't go out and climb up in the cab and turn it on. See if you can get 1610, and then call me back. And tell me if you're picking up 1610. I'm still trying to find out if anybody stays up at night in the West Indies. I want you to call me on that number. 1-800 is the United States number on the screen to those who watch by television. On radio outside the United States, you can call Collect, area 818-240-8151. There's Los Angeles calling. The pity party is over. And Faith, I want to add $35 to my pledge and kick the devil in the teeth. Good for you. Seal Beach, what kind of radio would a person have to pick up 1610 AM? An AM radio. No, you can go to Radio Shack and ask them for a special radio that is designed to pick up distant AM stations. And they have radios like that. Ask them if you can go out on the sidewalk and see if they can pick up 1610. But know this, it's easier to pick up at night than it is in the daytime. So a daytime test may not be a surefire test, plus the fact can't hear me. Gotta wait till 9 o'clock. My voice has carrying power. They tell me at the station they have never had such distant coverage in their lifetime until I went on. That's God. Now go on telephone. The Lord said unto Moses, Exodus 4, verse 19, and Midian, go return into Egypt, for all the men are dead which sought thy life. Moses took his wife and his sons and set them upon an ass, and he returned to the land of Egypt. And Moses took the rod of God in his hand. And the Lord said unto Moses, when thou goest to return into Egypt, see that thou do all the wonders before Pharaoh which I have put in thine hand. But I will harden his heart, and he shall not let the people go. I'll deal with that later. Thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, thus saith the Lord, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. And I say unto thee, let my son go, that he may serve me. And if thou refuse to let him go, behold, I will slay thy son, even thy firstborn. And it came to pass, by the way in the end, that the Lord met him. Now think about this poor guy. Too hot in here. That isn't what the Lord said. That's my part. It's just hot in this room. Here this poor guy. The Lord doesn't make any sense at all. The Lord spared him, preserved him when all the other babies were being killed because of the faith of his parents, floated him into the king's house, educated him, trained him. If you read Josephus' record, just before the incident where he fled Egypt, he had returned from winning a mighty battle. So he spared him in battle. He goes out to try to deliver God's people in his own strength. Flees to the wilderness. God lets him get schooled in the wilderness for 40 years. Finds him right there beside the hill and speaks to him. Calls him, beats down his arguments, shows him what he can do through the power of God, the miracle of the rod that became a serpent, the leprous hand, the water to blood. Gets irritated with his arguments and gives him Aaron that he had seen already was on the way. Tells him he's not only going to deliver the children of Israel, he's going to bring him back to that Mount Sinai, and as a token that God's going to deliver him and take him all the way into Canaan. Says you'll worship God and serve me, and the people will worship God and serve me right here on this mountain in anticipation of the giving of the law that he would do later. Tells him to take the rod in his hand and go to Egypt now. What is he supposed to tell Pharaoh? God's got 430 years of promise at stake. And he finally got him on the road. Finally, he didn't want to go. Didn't want to go when the bush appeared. God made him go. Now he's finally on the way. Thank God, be satisfied. The Lord met him and sought to kill him. It reminds me, people said, I finally I accepted the word of God. I finally accepted the tithe is the Lord's, and I'm going to pay tithe. And the word of God says, prove me now herewith. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse and prove me. See if I don't pour you out a blessing you can't contain. And I got convinced, against my better judgment, started paying tithes, and the Lord tried to kill me. You got to give it to God. He's consistent. You're going to find out that later on, God's going to lament the fact that the Israelites never came to know God's ways. All they saw was his actions. Moses came to know God's ways. And what I'm trying to point out is the way you get to that point. Hey, wait a minute. God said three times, two chapters back, I'm going to send you to Pharaoh, lead these people out, and bring you to the land of the Canaanites, Perizzites, Hittites, Jebusites. And here God's trying to kill him. And he ain't near any of those people. The Lord said unto Moses, when thou goest to return to Egypt, see that thou do all those wonders before Pharaoh, which I put in thine hand. Okay, here comes the wonder worker. En route to Pharaoh, obeying God. Came to pass by the way. Boy, he's by the way. He's really get to you. Came to pass by the way, in the end, that the Lord met him. Oh, I'd like to meet the Lord sometime, people say. Wouldn't it be wonderful to meet the Lord in the way? Came to pass by the way in the end that the Lord met him and sought to kill him. Is that any way to repay a person for finally obeying God? I followed you to Hope Street, and the Lord tried to kill me. You know, there's nothing in between 24th verse and 25th verse. Boy, something went on, though. I mean, there was something that Moses did to that wife between the 24th verse and the 25th verse. Because it came to pass by the way in the end that the Lord met him and sought to kill him. I don't know what Moses and Zipporah were doing in the end before the Lord met him. But I know that whatever they did after the Lord met him sure shaped up Zipporah real quick. Didn't zip her up completely. But it's sort of an interesting sequence here. Came to pass by the way in the end that the Lord met him and sought to kill him. I remember a preacher once saying, God's a good God. Any time that anything evil happens to anybody, it's not God. And I remember saying, well, tell that to Korah, whom the earth opened up and swallowed up. Tell that to Saul after God turned on him. Tell that to Moses here for a minute or two. I think that God in his word has the ability to say, if this is what happened, came to pass by the way in the end that the Lord met him and said, by the way, I'm thinking about killing you. It said the Lord met him and sought to kill him. That's an engagement, man. I can just see him clawing the covers out of his face and saying, what the hell's going on? God landed on him. I mean, I'm on my way to Egypt to work miracles for God, and the same God's now standing over me, beating on me. I don't know what Moses did, but he sure did something. Something not recorded here. I mean, there's a gap. Because the next word is then. Zipporah took a sharp stone and cut off the foreskin of her son. I mean, whatever God was doing to Moses got Moses doing whatever he did to Zipporah, got Zipporah going and grabbing that kid or Moses and getting that kid out. And you don't just carry sharp stones to bed with you. I mean, can't you see her scurrying around out there trying to find a rock that's sharp enough? Man, I'll bet there was some helter-skelter activity there for a minute. All the time the Lord is trying to kill Moses. You want me to continue?
Yes, sir.
Get on telephone. Moses was finally caught by God and in Exodus 1 through the 4th chapter up to the 24th verse, God preserves him, God takes care of him, God calls him, God persuades him, God makes sure that he has all the training necessary, God promises him miracles, God tells him what to do and where he's going to end up. And here in the 24th verse, it came to pass by the way in the end that the Lord met him and sought to kill him. God didn't come down to walk and talk with him and bless him. He sought to kill him. It's too cold in here now, Brad. I want that to settle in. I have an idea that Moses was a little further along the road than most of you, most of us. I have an idea God had a lot bigger investment in Moses than he did in most of you. How many 80-year-olds are sitting around here? 80 years God had gotten him ready. That's a pretty good investment. Is there anything between North Pole and... I know we're going worldwide now. See if you can find something in the trade winds area. I mean, either get the equator or the Antarctica. You that are listening on radio got to understand that this is a television program being simulcast. And it's a live audience in here. First we were burning up, now we're freezing to death. That's what you miss when you just listen on radio. That's a lot of investment. God had been dealing with him for 80 years. Watching his every move. When he thinks he's ready, calls him in a burning bush that isn't consumed. Works miracles that blow the mind. Now he's going to kill him. Well, God can't mean that. Well, it's obvious that Moses wasn't going to risk it. He had talked to God more directly than you and I have ever talked to him. He was convinced. And somewhere or other, man, he got to that woman. And she got to that rock. And they got that kid. I don't know if God was holding Moses down while he was giving her orders or not. Zipporah took a sharp stone, cut off the foreskin of her son, cast it at his feet and said, "Surely a bloody husband art thou to me." Apparently, Moses was holding the screaming kid. Because it says, so he let him go. Now with the kid loose. Then she said, "A bloody husband thou art because of the circumcision." Don't hear more about her. Moses went on without her. She don't show up till Egypt's over and they're out of Egypt through the Red Sea and somewhere in the wilderness they show up. He just went on without her, married somebody else down in Egypt. Just left her and got himself another woman. Now, not too many preachers will tell you this about Moses. "Thou art a bloody husband unto me." So he left her and the kid and went off without her. I want to tell you, this family deification in today's world is a crock of heresy. They've got a bunch of wimps running around that don't have the gonads to rule their house that are telling you that the family should be above God. I had a woman like that once. She said to me, as I was leaving, she didn't say, "Thou art a bloody husband unto me," but she meant to. She says, "You never do any family counseling. All you ever do when somebody has marital problems is, quote, Luke 14. If any man come after me and hate not his father and mother and wife, children, brother, sister, yea, and his own life also, cannot be my disciple." That's all I've heard out of you for 23 years. I said, "Right." Right. I left the old broad and never looked back. Neither did Moses. He found out. There are going to be seven women to one man in the last days. Go find yourself another one. Moses did. Oh, I'm telling you, that teacher blew the bottom out of my hand grenade. I got a hand grenade for a lighter, and it just blew the bottom out of it. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
He left her. You see, there are some things God won't tolerate. He won't tolerate a man of God that he calls to do a work that lets his family interfere with his commitment. There wasn't any partnership between Zipporah and Moses. How is he going to lead these people out? The point here is, a bloody husband thou art because of the circumcision. Now that was the covenant sign of their relationship in that day. It's circumcision of the heart that's done by the indwelling spirit that God puts in us and makes us a new creation in Christ Jesus that is the mark of the covenant relationship now that is God's gift because of faith. But in that day, that was the mark of being God chosen. And she resented that. And he's heading off to Egypt with a wife and a son that they were fighting over in regard to God's claims on their life. The thing I like about Moses, he didn't just leave her and a kid. He circumcised him first and then left him. I'm telling you, when God calls you, you better take his calling serious. I mean, there's a certain amount of arguing and tugging and pulling and trying to talk God into your view of things. But after a while, he's going to get you, just like Jesus got Peter. He said, essentially, up to now, you've kind of done what you wanted to do. But from here on, another one's going to gird you and lead you and take you to death. Peter knew what he said. He didn't spiritualize it. He looked over John and said, what about him? Jesus said, none of your business. If he lives like come, what's that to you? I just told you what I'm doing with you. The call of God's got that vertical laser beam ability. Don't tell me you don't know when God called you. You don't get any of those desires to respond from Satan. Only God can give you that quickening of spirit. No man cometh to the Father, I said earlier, save the spirit drawing. Now, you can keep saying no and keep saying no. Keep trying to strike these compromise, mutual covenant relationships. And you can listen to all the claptrap that would place the family and the institution above God. God allows nothing between his claim and you. A man's foes will be those of his own household. In regard to those very family ties, think not that I'm come to bring peace, I've come to bring a sword. Every age of the church has got some popular fad that twists the simple old truths. I've told you women are superior creatures. Absolutely. Satan knew that. He wasn't about to tempt Adam first. He knew Eve had more sense than to do what he did. Took a superior being, Lucifer, to tempt the superior being, Eve. And Adam then was had. Putty in her hands. And no man can match a woman. You want a job done, get a woman to do it. If a man had to bear a child, he'd commit suicide. Talk about screaming for morphine. You put a man in labor pains, he'd kill himself. And men strut around and think you're superior beings. You're inferior. You don't just have inferiority complexes, you're inferior. All women are superior to men. They can bear more pain, One for one across this world, women are superior and there's more of them. They're so slowly ruling the world because men go out and make money and die and leave it to women. It's a losing game, guys. I'm the only man who knows it. But I got a mission from God. God put a curse. A curse on women. He put a curse on men. Men have to work by the sweat of their brow. The curse he put on women is superior beings until Jesus comes have to obey inferior beings. That's my mission from God. I know women are superior, but the only place they belong is under a man. That's what I said. If you don't keep them there, you're a fool. It ain't fair. It ain't fair. I don't ever ask myself, is my idea the best when I'm dealing with a woman? It's my idea. No woman in this church will ever rule it. If an idea comes from a woman, you better be tricky enough to send it through a man. I don't give them an inch. Not one cotton picking inch. Because it's God's will. I got a divine order to be a chauvinist. We need wimps that support women's equality. It's a good thing I don't play football or baseball. One of those women reporters coming to place where I am. I'll remind them of the curse. Nothing to do with any of these silly ideas about equality. Had nothing to do with it. Women can best a man in anything. There ain't a man in the world can match a woman in sex. You always tell a man doesn't know anything about sex and has had very little. He thinks he can outdo a woman. Crazy fool. There's nothing a woman can't do better than a man. Keep them under. Keep them under. It's God's will. I'd love to be somebody listening out there on radio. They don't know whether I'm serious or not. See, I admit I'm inferior. Thanks be to God, he put me on top. I'm staying there fighting for it as long as I can. Don't ever, ever try to use arguments of fairness or decency or any of those arguments. I'm going to be unfair, unreasonable, anything to stay on top, further God's will. Zipporah. She was one of those early ones. And he left her. Some of these modern preachers running around talking on radio would have stopped his trip to Egypt long enough to do some marriage counseling. Send her home to daddy. Take his buddy self and go to Egypt, that's what he did. And you notice, God never tried to kill him for leaving his wife. Only Christians try to do that. Now, get on the telephone. You've learned a lot tonight. Now, I've had a lot of fun with you tonight, and you're going to have to figure out how much was fun and how much was serious in the fun part. But I want you to understand the message of this 24th and 25th verse. And I don't care whether it's the man or the woman. You don't let anything in your family come between you and God. Jesus said, Luke 14, which I was reminded of years ago by someone who didn't like that verse. One of the Gospels, they all talk about hating father, mother, wife, children, brother, sister, yea, and your own life also. Another Gospel puts it in terms of preference. Nothing is to be preferred to God and His call on your life. He got his wife and son back. They came to him in the wilderness and went the way he was going. There is a little too much emphasis on earthly ties that put God in some kind of box that if those earthly ties are not maintained somehow or other, you have separated from God. Baloney. Paul couldn't have been a member of the Sanhedrin if he hadn't been married. A lot of people think his thorn in the flesh was his wife. I don't believe that. I think his thorn in the flesh was exactly what he said it was, a messenger of Satan. The only people that ever had any trouble trying to figure out what Paul's thorn was were the liberals or the liberal-dominated thinkers who didn't believe in Satan and evil spirits. He had a full-time messenger of Satan buffeting him at all times. His thorn was exactly what he said it was. It wasn't some kind of ophthalmia from seeing the bright light out of heaven. Common sense tells you he ain't going to look at people with pus running out of his eyes and inspire faith and healing. His thorn in the flesh was a demon from hell, an agent of the prince of the power of the air. And I'm not suggesting that people use God to abuse personal relationships. But the point of this verse is that God figured out, having tested Moses on everything else, where the toughest test would come. A wife that decided she was the judge of what God wanted and what God demanded. And he made the right choice. And if he hadn't, God would have killed him. Well, God may kill you a little slower today, but the results are the same. You better put God first in all that you do. I'll go on telephone.